This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
You resist temptation admirably.
Temptation?
The key.
Well, why would I want it?
For many reasons. There is, in some cases, a psychic need to loose evil upon the world. And we all of us carry within us a desire for death. You fear the panther, yet you're drawn to him again and again. Couldn't you turn to him as an instrument of death?
Hi, everyone. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dan.
Welcome back to 15 Minute Film Fanatics. I'm sure you know how this podcast works by this point. What are we doing this week, Dan?
Cat People.
Cat People from 1942, the original, directed by Jacques Tourneur. I told you to watch this. I don't know how you feel about it. We really didn't talk about this one, but you have that ungrateful grin that you get on your face, which I know that this is radio, so that they can't see your face. So I'm going to let you give your overall thoughts, but something tells me that you're ungrateful.
No, I have a lot to say. I'm always grateful for a new film and a new conversation. Uh-huh. So this movie can be summed up in a great poem, not by John Donne, which we will talk about later, the John Donne passage that ends the film, but there's a poem by Ogden Nash that I would like to recite in full right now on the podcast that summarizes the issues of this movie. Are you ready?
Only because I like Ogden Nash. Go.
Are you ready?
Yes.
If you're called by a panther, don't anther. And that is the theme of this movie. This movie is like the setup for a Rodney Dangerfield joke that I couldn't get the punchline to. It's like, yeah, my wife, she says she won't sleep with me because if she does, she'll turn into a panther because she's so full of passion. And then I can't think of the punchline about what it would really be. But let's talk more seriously about this movie. You know, why cats, right? So you get literary cats. I'm thinking about Poe's Black Cat. I'm thinking about, you know, Bob Kane's Catwoman. The feline form is the feminine, right? And that's kind of what she is, what Irina is in this movie. She's sexy and she's dangerous and she's full of magic and she's mysterious. You got to kind of keep hold that magic down. What's your take on this movie? Let's start with the part one. Why do you love it so much?
First of all, this movie is an RKO production called Cat People. So it tells you what's going on as soon as you walk in the door. And I thought so from the first time I watched it. Like the poster will tell you what's going on. In case you didn't get it, the first 5 minutes of this movie will tell you what's going on. And then in case you didn't get it from there, the first 10 minutes of this movie will tell you what's going on. So if there were some big sexual metaphor and then at the end she transformed into a panther, you'd be like, I felt kind of lost. I don't see what was going on in there. But if it's in the first 5 minutes, then you should know what's going on. Like this movie tells you exactly where you're going to be. However, I am deeply charmed by, like, I take this seriously the same way that I take the rest of noir seriously. I think that this is a deeply underrated film. It's full of anxiety, but I mean that in a good way. I mean, it touches in that it is fabulous and weird and sometimes silly and over dramatic. It does nevertheless touch some actual issues. And I think that its art is also in how beautiful it is, because this is a pretty movie to watch. There are many, many practical effects, like I'll get to in my moment, which are real jump scares. They're better than jump scares in some movies made this year in 2024. And the beauty of this movie is kind of in its bones, is in the melodrama of its script, in some of the overblown performances of its actors, in the dramatic way that it's put together. Of course, it's what is it, 90 minutes in now? I don't know its exact runtime, but you know, that always charms me. But I feel, for those reasons, like it should be taken seriously as a noir, because that's what noir is all about.
Well, it's funny because you said noir, because of course Tournier directed a film that we've done in the past that we love. What noir movie did he direct?
Out of the Past with Robert Mitchum.
Out of the Past with Robert Mitchum and Kirk Douglas. And it does have that same kind of look. I mean, I think, spoiler alert, Out of the Past is a much better movie account.
But hold on, because I want to ask you about that, because people take Out of the Past very seriously, right? You could go to a film festival, a major film festival, and they'll show a screening of Out of the Past with Q&A by somebody who was the second boy on the film, but is now, you know, an 85-year-old that they have to wheel into the room.
Kirk Douglas didn't approve of all that smoking.
There you go. But you don't go to a major film festival and see Cat People. You go to an art house and they play it as, you know, as their B movie, but they play it tongue in cheek. And so
I don't think so. This got the Golden Criterion treatment.
Well, it gets the Golden Michael treatment, as far as but here's what I want to ask you is, knowing that Out of the Past is also full of a lot of the same elements, which is some overblown performances, a very interesting script, interesting structure, similar themes. Like, why is it that you take this movie less seriously? Let me ask you.
Oh, come on, man. Well, first of all, because it's called Cat People, not to be confused with the sequel in 1944, The Curse of the Cat People. It's like asking, why do you take Master and Commander, a great naval film about water, more seriously than The Creature from the Black Lagoon?
No, I don't agree with that.
I know, I'm being sarcastic, but I'm sorry. But I mean, I think that this is the epitome, and I love the Criterion Channel. I love it. I'm a subscriber for life, but I think this is the epitome of a movie that the Criterion Channel will take that is not that great of a movie, and they'll give it the whole Criterion gussy up kind of thing, as if to pretend that it's some great statement or great work of art. This movie is not a great work of art, Michael. It is not.
What stops it from being a great work of art?
Well, first of all, let's talk about this. The actors are I was going to save this for part three. The actors are so bad. I mean, Kent Smith as Oliver, he makes Gregory Peck look like Jack Nicholson in The Last Detail. He's so wooden. There's so much, it's 90 minutes. There's so much downtime where like he's flirting with Alice and they're looking at they have the T-score out and they're going to make their measurements for the boats and for the hull. Oh, I got the numbers wrong again. Like the part in the pool is great. The part where she's walking home alone, great, even though that's kind of fun. She's like, is it all right if I walk home alone about a mile on these dark streets through a couple tunnels? Sure thing. Like, okay, but that's in there so she can get followed by the cat you don't see. There's all that jaw stuff in there where you don't see the panther, but you know it's there. But the performances are like so wooden. The psychiatrist is so bad, I would watch him for 20 hours.
I think he's great.
First of all, the whole idea of psychiatry where you lay on the couch and it was a key. I'm searching for the key. That guy, he's hilarious with this walking stick that he ends up stabbing her with.
It's a sword cane.
I know. He's so overdone. It's beyond irony how that guy is overdone.
Okay. My point is that the conventions of noir, I'm not saying that this is.
You asked me why Out of the Past is a better movie. Out of the Past, come on, man.
Okay, but I'm saying, like for example, the convention of voiceover that's not funny somehow. Although it is totally overblown. It's always the most dramatic thing that could possibly happen. The drama, even of the interplay of shadow, is supposed to mirror, you know, inner turmoil. Is Robert Mitchum a better actor than Kent Smith? Yes, he is. He's great. But I don't think that there's any real inherent reason why this movie does not get respect. And I understand what you're talking about getting respect, but is deserving of respect.
Well, I mean, there are people who like you who think that I'm wrong about this, and that's fine. I don't, and I'm trying to be funny too.
Or you're wrong.
Yeah. I'm trying to be funny too, for the sake of the podcast, and maybe I'm succeeding or not, but I think that, you know, Out of the Past, it's about, it is a whole other universe away from this movie. Now, this movie does have noir elements, like it's got the ultimate dangerous woman, I guess you could say. She's more dangerous than Barbara Stanwyck in Double Indemnity. And I think that's what's funny about the movies. It takes, okay, you want a dangerous woman? You want a dangerous noir woman? How about this one? And I'm gonna let you know in the first scene, and by the fact that she goes to a zoo and sketches a panther all day and has cats all over her strangely furnished giant Baroque apartment, all these cats everywhere. And I'm also going to show you the figure of King John, you know, in the hypnosis and in the dream. That's going to be cool too. So it takes it and really runs with it. But it's not, I mean, it definitely has ideas, which we'll talk about. I think we should talk about in part two. But I think that there's an inherent silliness to this. And I think you might be charmed by that silliness in the exact same way you're charmed by the silliness of The Omen. Welcome back. In part two, we talk about our favorite moments. Mike, what's yours?
Mine is as uncomplicated and unsophisticated as it could possibly be, which is when Irina is stalking the secretary on the way home, and she keeps looking over her shoulder. As you said, it is Jaws. The movie, the atmosphere, everything is telling you that she's there. You can't tell that she's there, but then when the bus pulls up, it makes that hiss sound, and which I think is just a brilliant jump scare.
That's a great moment,
and I think that embodies the charm of the film as a whole, because it is like something made from baser materials, which is what we're arguing about, whether it's made from refined or base materials, but it is something beautiful that works made from base materials. And that the reason why that's scary and made with real craftsmanship is, I think, one of the reasons that they can't make a really scary movie today, because the woman who plays that secretary is being chased by Irina is really scared. We're scared. We're all drawn in. Like, you could say that this movie's silly or it doesn't work. Definitely in the bus scene, it works, and it works on almost anybody willing to participate in the charm of this movie.
Fair enough. It's funny you said it's well-crafted but made of baser materials, but the movie also thinks that it's written by Henry James. I mean, first of all, it starts with an epigraph from one of its own characters. It starts with an epigraph from the psychiatrist and ending with John Donne. I mean, this movie doesn't just think it's about jump scares. This movie definitely thinks it has ideas. You know, be that as it may, I want to talk about actually one of those ideas in my moment, which I think is interesting in the movie, despite all my jokes. So my moment is when Irina says, little throwaway line, she says, "I envy normal women, they're free." And I think that's a really interesting line. And it reminded me very much of a book that I know you've read 100 times, I've read 100 times, that we both love, which is, this movie reminds me very much of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. It's very much like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So people get that book wrong all the time. They think that he drinks the potion and then he's a different guy. He's not. Dr. Jekyll wants to live a life of passion and of you know, leaving his moral rectitude, but at the same time he wants his moral rectitude. He wants to have it both ways. Now, the way most people deal with that is, you kind of, like, you know, you go to New Orleans for a weekend, or you go to Vegas, and then you come back and you keep being an anesthesiologist or whatever you do. But Jekyll wants to go all out. At each end, he wants to be both, you know, Marcus Welby, MD, and he wants to be like, you know, a hippie at Woodstock. And each of those are as strong in him. So he thinks the potion's going to do it. What happens with Irina is that she's afraid to even drink the potion. She's afraid to even sample it, because she knows through her Serbian legacy that her emotions are so much more destructive and wild than those experienced by regular people. There's something like that going on, right?
Yeah, what I find interesting is that other noir are about personal decisions that have led to hang-ups or complexities that need to get worked out. And this is almost in a distinctly non-American way, national characteristics or national psychoses that both do and do not apply to what you would think of as American life, which I think is really interesting and insightful.
Yeah, that's funny because Out of the Past, of course, is about how this thing you've done years ago keeps on happening and happening and happening. And Robert Mitchum, remember, he's running the gas station with the deaf kid in the beginning, and he's done. He's like, okay, that whole part of my life is over. And then, of course, you find out, well, no, it's really not. He, you know, noir is about trying to keep these things at bay. And then sometimes they explode. That's what happens in Double Indemnity. Like they flirt with each other until they realize they got to kill the guy, or the postman always rings twice. But here, that's what Irene is trying to do, right?
But I assume that you take Robert Louis Stevenson seriously.
I do.
Okay. So what really is the difference between Dr. Jekyll as a short novel, which I think, by the way, is beautiful, brilliant. I agree with those that take it seriously, and this movie, because I would say if you said, well, the dialogue in it is overblown, yes. If you said, well, some of the characters are silly, I would say certainly, you know, because it has to, it's not told from his perspective. It's told from the perspective of the people observing him. You know, if you said, well, if in its mechanisms, it is fabulous, as in a fable, I would say, yeah, of course. So what's the difference? Or are you hoisted by your own petard?
The difference is that we're talking about apples and oranges, first of all. I think that, you know, that the if Cat People were a novel and you handed it to me, who knows? Because the value of the tale would be in the telling. So I might say, this is really great. Yeah, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, nobody reads that for its dialogue or something like that. You read it really for the conceit and for that central idea, and for the long confession of Henry Jekyll, which is like the last 20 pages of the book, where he explains exactly what happened. I mean, that's like a great set piece.
But it's so great, and the Stevenson's voice.
Well, there's no voice like that in Cat People. You're watching it. There's no voice.
They're not. But I'm saying, but vision. It is delicious to watch. Yes. Visually, it is. This is an appealing movie. Even the way that the water laps, like in the pool scene, is interesting. Everything is interesting.
The shadow of the leopard in the pool scene is really interesting. You know, why she's swimming in the dark is kind of interesting. Why she even decides to go for a swim is interesting. This movie is also full of people who do movie things. Like I said before, when he lets her walk home alone, like there's so many clumsy things in the movie.
I don't know. Doesn't Dr. Jekyll's like landlady let the two guys in to explore his old laboratory? Yeah. You know what I mean? There's the 18th century literature is full of landladies letting people in places.
That's very funny. I think that what it has in common with Jekyll and Hyde is at one point someone says to Irina, maybe it's the hypnotist, he says, you fear the panther but are drawn to it again and again. And I think that's an interesting thing, the way that, like, if you look at Jekyll and Hyde as a story about addiction, or about a story about wanting to, like, kind of like keep your day job but have a wild nightlife, that's kind of what goes on here. And it's about that struggle. And she tries to take care of it. I can handle it. I can handle it. I'm fine. She's like every alcoholic who says, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. I can handle it. But she keeps getting drawn and drawn and drawn to it. And that's kind of like the struggle of the movie.
I can see you talking yourself into it.
So welcome back. In part 3, we always talk about the ending or the title. I think the title, as you said before, Mike, does its job. But what do you make of the ending?
Well, it depends what you think the ending is, because this movie starts ending like 40 minutes before it ends. Meaning you would think that some big confrontation between her and her husband is inevitable for the last scene. And, you know, he's made up his mind. But that happens in like the middle of the movie because it's only 90 minutes. Right. And so then she does the pool. And then she does the psychiatrist comes over and tries to seduce her. Then he dies. Then she chases them. Then once she's already chased them, then she goes to the zoo and then does the whole thing. So I think it depends what you mean by the end. I don't know. It's kind of all of a piece, and it's over in like 5 minutes experientially. I know it's 90 minutes, but it feels like it's over in 2 seconds. You know, she opens up, she steals the key.
Yes.
To open up the panther's cage.
Mm, yes. And the panther is unleashed.
And then the last line is, she never lied to us.
Well, once you unleash the panther, you must die. You can't live with that. You and that, in a Western, this town ain't big enough for the both of us. And I think that's kind of true metaphorically in the movie, right? You can't walk around as Irina and be the panther at the same time. You got to pick one.
Most people by some vision of normalcy. I think what one of the things that makes this movie interesting is how uninteresting the normal people in it are. Ostensibly, you're trying to become Oliver, right? The movie tells you that what you want to be is Oliver and Alice.
Sure.
And you definitely don't want to be a panther and Tom Conway as Dr. Judd. So the movie's telling you that what you want to be, that normalcy is Oliver and Alice. And I think to make you more drawn to the Irina, I think what they do is they dramatize how square they are in an interesting way, because you can't live as the Panther. You get hit by a bus. You can't live as a Panther, but can you live as Oliver and Alice? And so I think that one of the interesting things is just there's light and dark in this movie, but there's an interplay of shadow. And I think that's dramatized in how wooden they are.
Well, what's funny is that, you know, yeah, you want to live as Oliver and Alice, but, you know, talk about a hot romance. Boy, talk about those two. Boy, that they must really light up the screen, like, you know.
It's all their natural chemistry that carries.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're really like Bogart and Bacall.
But I think that's what makes it work.
Right. So they're held up as a vision of normalcy. And the kind of the movie endorses that, because we do get its portentous quotation by John Donne, because that's how, you know, DeWitt Bodine, who wrote the movie, that's how you're told this is a serious thing, where you have John Donne come up and it's fancy calligraphy. And the phrase is, the lines are, "But black sin hath betrayed to endless night my world, both parts and both parts must die." And that's exactly what happens in Jekyll and Hyde. It's exactly what happens. Is like, you can let that panther loose, but once you do, there's no going back. And either you're going to die literally, or you might die morally, or you might die in a relationship. But once you unleash that thing, you can't put it back in the cage.
You're still talking yourself into it. Admit that you like this movie better now than you did 17 minutes ago.
I will admit it. Yeah. You got me. I have nothing to hide. I have no shame. I don't care. Yeah. I do like it better than I did now.
And I also have a weakness for RKO.
I will say this also, that about, 6 months ago, I watched as much as I could take of Paul Schrader's remake of this, which is really funny that it was done, because you could see why somebody would want to remake this. And you could see why Paul Schrader, of all people, would say, yeah, this is right up my alley. Like, on paper, for our favorite podcast, that we say, this doesn't work on paper, but it works on the movie. That does work on paper, but it doesn't work as a movie.
So let me ask you about that. So why do you think Paul Schrader, who is a great writer, right? You just made fun of DeWitt Bodine, and I'm sure his children or his inheritors somewhere are listening. But you just made fun of DeWitt Bodine, and Paul Schrader, we know, you know, can do it. He's a brilliant writer. So why is it that a brilliant writer cannot pull this movie off, but DeWitt Bodine can?
Well, I think Paul Schrader's interested in like the extremes of human experience. If you look at his resume, like that's what he's into. And I think he saw the opportunity to do Cat People and leave in all the explicitness that this film, that Bodine's film kind of hints at. And I think that's, you know, he had the license to do that. So you can do whatever you want. And he has Natasha Kinski and he has Malcolm McDowell. So, you know, he can put in more gore and more sex and do all these things.
But why is it so much worse to have those? I mean, I have thoughts.
I think
it's
worse. I think the remake is worse because it first of all, it tries to even tell the story more of like how the cat people have existed. And like the viewer doesn't care about the birth of the origin story of the cat people. Like you get, like, as you said before, we get it. It's a metaphor. It's called Cat People. Like, you get this movie in 5 minutes. I don't need the origin story. But also I think there's something to be said for the fact that this is a noirish looking film, that when it's in the bright colors of, you know, modern America, it just doesn't, there's something harder to accept about it. And I just think the movie's all over the place. I mean, it's a mess of a movie, the remake.
Your Honor, the defense rests.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We hope you enjoyed our conversation about Cat People. You could follow us on X at 15minfilm. You can follow us where else, Mike?
Letterboxd.
Listen up. Let us know what we should watch. And who knows, maybe Mike will suggest another movie that I'll talk myself into liking in 20 minutes.
Forbidden Planet.